Welcome to the Roots of American Music podcast. My name is Clint Holly, and I am happy to be your host today. This is episode 6 of the Akron Heritage Music Project, funded by the Knight Foundation, the GAR Foundation, and produced in conjunction with Roots of American Music. Today, we tackle the topic of opportunity in Akron, Ohio. We live in a world where opportunity is supposed to be given to all people on an equal basis. The reality is, opportunity is often withheld from certain people regardless of whether it's your race, your gender, or your identity. Our guest today is Marco Somerville. He's a colorful character who has spent a great part of his adult life in public service. He openly advocates for people who have not been given opportunities and is continuing to move into the future, trying to find new ways to give underserved people more opportunities in a place like Akron. So sit down with us while we talk to Marco and also listen to music from our musical guests, Free Black, an up-and-coming powerhouse hip-hop duo from Akron, Ohio also. Let's meet Marco.
My name is Marco. My mother would be mad. This is Marco S. Somerville. I am a native of Akron, born and raised here. I'm currently deputy mayor for the city of Akron and senior advisor to the mayor for the city. By profession, I also own a funeral home and have been involved in the community in a number of positions, president of the NAACP for one, Ward 3 council person, and also president of Akron City Council.
Oh, okay.
For 13 years.
Now, what was your inspiration to get involved in public service?
Well, a couple things. First of all, being a funeral director, I thought it was more important for me to make sure to help people while they were living and to be involved in the community. And the fact that I own my own business, that I could speak out on different issues and not have to worry about any repercussions. And thought that was a way for me to be involved in the community and make a difference.
Now, was the funeral home, was that a family business or was that a business that you started?
Ever since I was in elementary school, I had this dream of owning a funeral home. I can't really tell you where it came from, but I had this burning desire to be a funeral director. And I have an uncle that's a funeral director in Chicago, and I would go see him in the summer. But I just wanted to be a funeral director and decided to pursue that as my profession, and went to Kent State for 3 years, and then went to Cincinnati College of Mortuary Science for a year. Then I served a year apprenticeship here in the city, and then after that, I went to Cleveland. And after being in Cleveland for a number of years, I decided to come back home and open up my own funeral home, which is a very, very difficult thing to do, because when somebody dies, you're thinking your name. Of all the other things that are going on, and they might have had experiences or relationships with other people.
Sure, right.
But I was young and thought I could do everything, and I wasn't afraid. And so we went for it, and it takes a long time to build a name and a reputation.
Right.
And we started the business in 1978.
Wow.
And we're still in business, and our business has grown to the point that my daughter is now in the business with me, which I did not anticipate that happening. I have 3 children, and I never made my children work in the funeral business,
right,
because I used to work for other funeral directors, and they hated their parents because their parents made them work at the funeral home.
Because they forced them to do it.
And,
right?
I said, I would never do my kids like that.
Right.
And so, you know, my oldest daughter, who happens also to follow my footsteps, not just in the funeral business, but also in politics, and she's the 3rd ward councilman, as I had been, and now she is the president of the Akron City Council, as I was
okay.
Also. And she's the first African-American woman to hold that position.
That's amazing. So she's really following in
your
footsteps.
Right. I'm the 2nd African-American person to be president of the city council. Ed Davis was the 1st.
Okay.
So, she graduated from a historical black college, Lincoln University, where Thurgood Marshall graduated from.
Okay.
And also where Judge Rulak, who one of the 1st African-American judges here in the city, also a graduate of Lincoln University. So my daughter went there. She graduated. When we was coming back home, I asked what she was going to do. And she said that she had gotten a scholarship offer from the University of Akron to get a master's degree. And she was going to do that. And I said, well, what do you do after that? She said she wanted to be in the funeral business. And I was just shocked. You know, I said, well, I never knew that. She said, you never asked me. And so the rest is history. And I'm just so happy that I've built a business. And now I have a successor who's my daughter. And so it's all good.
I think that's why I asked if it was a family business, because it seemed to me that would be an amazingly hard business to start from
scratch.
Hard, you know. Like you said, people develop these relationships with people
over time. But I had incredible parents who got divorced a long time ago. But when I wanted to start my own business, they agreed to get back together. I don't know if I could do that. But they got back together and said, listen, we're going to pool our money together. We're going to help you. And so, you know, my parents helped me build a business, you know. And my dad worked at Goodyear, and, you know, he would not take vacation. He would take the money and give it to me. And my mother, you know, she had some savings, and she gave me her savings. And, you know, and then early on, you couldn't get a loan going to the bank. It takes a long time to get a loan,
right,
especially a new business. But eventually, we were able to go to the bank, and but, you know, I didn't have the credit or anything like that, so I had to get my parents to sign.
Right.
So I remember going to the bank, and I was trying to explain to them what they were getting into. We're going to do this, we're going to do that. And they said, listen, we're going to sign it because we believe in you. So you don't have to explain all that to us, you know.
Right.
Which is just a phenomenal thing for your parents to believe that much in you. And so, you know, they signed, and we, you know, start working the business, you know, and we didn't have very much money. We found an old car wash building, and my father said, this is the place. I said, man, you're crazy. This is a dump. And but you know, my father had that vision. I didn't have that vision. You know, I had the skill as far as I went to school and all those kind of attributes, but I did not have, you know, like see something and figure out how it could look. But my father had that ability, and he said, this is a great spot. And he's right. It was right off the freeway, not in the neighborhood. And, you know, so we started to work the business, you know, and just it's amazing how, you know, like people just come into your life, particularly, you know, at times like that. You know, and people always, you know, say they don't have any money or this or that. And money is an important thing. You have to have some money. I'm not going to try to say you don't have any. But it's just amazing, you know, what God will do. He will put people in your life to help you. You know, and that happened with me. You know, I had a lot of people just help me. You know what I mean? And you know, lay up the street for me. You know, I mean, I mean, she used to iron for my mother, and you know, and I remember being younger, she would give us potato chips because she would get the big cans. She wanted to keep the cans to put flour in or whatever.
Right, right.
And so, so when I told her I was going to the funeral business, she said, "Listen, you know, I want to help you." You know, I'm saying, "What does this lady got to help me?" You know, but end up she had money. She had more money than I thought she had, and so she said, "Listen, let me borrow your carpet for you." And at the time, go to O'Neill's. I don't want no cheap carpet. Get the best they got, you know, and stuff like that. So you know, it's just been a lot of people that I ran into through the years that helped me. I worked in Cleveland for a while, so a lot of the funeral directors in Cleveland, you know, really helped me out and gave me guidance, and you know, and were very nurturing to me as I tried to get started in this funeral business. And you know, I've just been very blessed, and it's just all kind of worked pretty good for me.
Now, you said that your father worked at Goodyear. Mm-mm. Were your mother and father from Akron originally?
Yeah, my father was born here. My mother was actually born in Harlan, Kentucky.
Okay.
But she moved here, and she worked at Goodyear Aerospace. My father worked at Goodyear since he was 16 years old.
Wow.
And so when I graduated from high school, I woke up the day after high school, and I was sleeping in the bed, and my mother's knocking on the door. She said, "You got to get up." I said, "Well, what are you talking about? I just graduated last night." She said, "Well, okay, but you got to get a job.
Right.
You got to find a job or something." I said, "Wait a minute, I just graduated last night."
Right.
And they said, "Well, that ain't got nothing to do with today."
Right.
You know, and so, you know, my mother made me go out and get a job, and you know, and so I ended up getting a job at Ohio Edison at the time.
Okay.
And so they had me painting poles, and it was called underground and stuff like that we did. And it was a great experience. And I would love for it to rain, because when it rained with the electric company, you didn't have to work.
Right.
So we would always be, you know, begging for rain.
Right.
But so, you know, so then I worked there. And then later on, I met a guy by the name of Jesse Williams, who worked with my mother at Goodyear. And she told him about me. And so I went and met with him. He said, "Listen, why don't I get you a job here at Goodyear, working on the squad," which was a great job. You know, and that job, you know, we balanced production. So where you didn't have no steady job there, whenever you went to work, it just depended on where they needed you at.
Really?
You know? So they put you usually the terrible jobs.
Right.
Especially initially, you get the dirtiest and the hottest jobs. And so Jesse Williams was at the time he was a manager, eventually became the vice president of the company, one of the vice presidents. And so I went and met with him, and he said, he's going to give me a job. And I said, hey, man, I'm not going to let you down. And he said, you know what? Don't worry about letting me down. Don't let yourself down.
Right.
And, you know, and that was just a beautiful thing. And unfortunately, he just died 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear
And he died in Wilmington, Delaware. But I had to go to the service and pay homage to that, to him, because he's another person that was put in my life and very encouraging, always encouraged me when I was trying to do as far as my professional career. And I got involved in politics. He's just always very encouraging, just very supportive.
Right.
And then when my daughter graduated, at the graduation I was telling you about, Wilmington, Delaware is not too far from Lincoln University.
Okay.
So he came to the graduation with my daughter and
really?
Spent the whole day with us. So God rest his soul. He was a good man.
You have had some amazing people in your life.
Yeah, I really, really, really have.
For people to tell people, that be that encouraging is sometimes pretty unusual. You said your mom came from Kentucky. What brought your mom here?
Well, she ended up coming here probably because of work opportunity. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. her father was killed in the mines.
He was a coal miner.
He was a coal miner, died in the mines. Then my grandmother remarried a gentleman by the name of Ben Case. And he's one of the few African Americans at the time who had actually completed college. And, you know, and of course, he was African American, so nobody would hire him to be a teacher. So, he kind of got any kind of work he could get, and he ended up getting hurt on his job he got. But that's how they kind of ended up here, because of work and stuff.
Both your parents worked for Goodyear. When did that kind of hit its peak, and then when do we see kind of like that, what happened in a lot of other Rust Belt cities where the industry kind of started to decline?
It probably started sometime in the 60s when it started to decline. Mm-hmm. And in Akron, and that's one of the situations with African-American people in the city. You don't see a lot of African-American businesses here. You just haven't seen them.
Right.
Back in the day, you see it more now. But that's because back then, you didn't have to start a business. You could get a job.
Right.
You could get a job at Goodyear. And if Goodyear wasn't enough, they work six-hour shifts, you could go to Firestone. So you could work at Firestone,
six-hour, and Goodyear.
You could do that back then. And so some people worked both places. So it was really no need to go into business because you could get
steady work,
and you didn't have to worry about, going in business and can I pay my bills and all that. So that's why you didn't see a lot of black entrepreneurship here in the city of Akron. It's for the very reason, because the rubber companies were paying and people could get work. And there's really no need to go into business. Now a lot of people have to go into business because there's not a lot of job opportunities here.
I really enjoyed talking to Marco about his earlier life and the opportunities that his parents sought out, the opportunities that his parents gave to him, and the opportunities that came to him from places that he didn't even realize that they might come from. And his appreciation for those opportunities spills over into this attitude that he wanted to enter public service to help people while they were still alive. Let's take a break from the interview for a few minutes and check in with our musical guest for this podcast, which is a up-and-coming hip-hop group called Free Black. They're a duo, and both members have migrated to Akron, Ohio to pursue various opportunities, educational and otherwise. And these are some guys that have stuff on their minds like a lot of other people these days. And in 2020, they released an album called Freedom Summer. And since then, they have released a steady string of singles during the pandemic to keep themselves in people's consciousness. They sat down with me and they talked for a while, and they also did an amazing live performance on the Roots of American Music live stream. So I encourage everybody to go to the Roots of American Music Facebook page, give it a like, and you'll get notified of these live streams when they go live. We also archive all of our shows on our Facebook page, so be sure and dig through all of those and enjoy all of the great performances that have been brought to you by the Akron Heritage Music Project. So let's sit down with Free Black for a few minutes, learn a little bit more about them, and listen to one of their songs called True Love Is.
I'm Holger Kraus III. I play drums. I'm also a producer. Here in Akron, Ohio.
I'm Flaco Torres, vocalist, producer, songwriter, and the other half of Free Black.
Now, how long has Free Black been together?
Since 2017.
Okay. What was the spark to put that together?
Well, we had met at Uncorked Wine Bar over here on High Street. We were there for one of the open mic nights that Gretchen Plus usually has.
Oh, yeah.
And that particular night, he just happened to be there. Mm-hmm. And I had put out my first EP, and I had had a copy. I'd given it to you, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then from there, it was just, we just connected through email, and I sent him some beats, and he would send me references back.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah.
So at that time, I was doing kind of like just short, like just basically shows, like where I was just playing beats and drums, and then I would have like special guests come, and like either Chris Coles would come play saxophone, or
right.
Jewel Big Green would come and MC, or he would come and MC. Mm-hmm. And this is like basically the platform we would use just to like test out the material that we had been working on.
I think I think our name, for the most part, that we try to push that more than anything else.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like the concept behind our name of we are free, like it's free to be whatever you want to be. So mm-hmm. for us, it's Free Black. For you, it may be Free Trans, it may be Free Gymnast, it may be whatever the thing is. Our message is everybody's free to be whoever they
want
to
be.
Wanna be.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we push that a little bit more of like, when you come to the shows, that's why it doesn't look like one group of people. It looks like everybody.
Yeah. Right?
Because everybody is free to be there in that moment and have a good time. And that's kind of like our overall thing.
Oh, cool. The song's called True Love Is.
When the money goes, where the honey stay, where the gray skies replace the sunny day. That's a question you gotta ask yourself. When the goal is amassing wealth, and arrogance is common when you can't see past your belt. And the rings getting pawned when the pressure's felt. You know the story. American dreams turn to glory. Watching it fall down, suicide in his 40s. Watch the kids fight with the wife for the Porsches. Same what'll happen when we turn into corpses. Worked your whole life to have friends on your porches. Watching what the bank's about to do to your mortgage. Still got a man and a porter, cause you gotta keep the show going like
one division.
And if you don't, she won't have
time to visit.
My wallet, my choice just ain't realistic. Money ain't the root, it's the stage design. It's gonna show who you are at just the right time. Mic check 212, you know the vibes. Coming to you live for $1.99. And if you know the words, please sing it to the mic. And if you don't, well, we gonna double the price. It goes mic check 212, you know what's up. And if you don't, well, spouse gets the Benz and then repo the truck. And you can see your kids like check yourself before you wreck yourself. You know they say the market always corrects itself. Don't listen to the news, the scrolling on your phone. Just hit StockX trying to keep up with the Joneses. Resale value tripled in a moment. Nice pair of shoes got you dripping while you're homeless. Send a cash app, she's sending you emojis. Sent the laughing one, you must be the oldest. Who would have known we turned beer to a barrier? Sending classism to a lower class area. Some care too much, some don't care enough. Watch the neighborhood turn black and they be scared as I came by happiness. But if I, when she got 5 carats, moved next door when she broke off the marriage. She got to keep the ring and our friend. Damn.
That's not how it's supposed to be. For me to love you and you not to love me.
Mic check 212, you know the vibes. Coming to you live.
$1.99.
If you know the words, please sing it to the mic. And if you don't, well, we gon' double the price. It goes mic check 212, you know what's up. And if you don't, well,
sorry for your luck.
Spouse gets the Benz and it repo the truck. And you can see your kids like every other mom.
Right.
Now, one of our other podcasts, we talked about Howard Street and the music clubs that used to be on Howard Street and the jazz scene and stuff that that evolved around that whole thing. And there were African-American business owners for some of those clubs, and especially the musicians and stuff like that. What were the circumstances that led to Howard Street kind of being, you know, torn down? And, you know, part of what we're trying to talk about in this podcast is a little bit about urban renewal and how that affects poorer communities and communities of color and stuff like that. So what kind of happened in Akron?
Well, you know, now my aunt, my grandmother's sister, she was a beautician, and she had a beauty salon where? On Howard Street. And her beauty shop was attached to the Matthews Hotel.
Was it really?
And so there was her beauty shop, the Matthews Hotel upstairs, go up some steps, and then over there they had a barbershop.
Right.
So in the barbershop, I would get my hair cut, and my aunt, you know, I would say, back in the day, you know, a lot of African-American people got processes,
right,
you know, where they put the hot comb in their hair and all that kind. So I asked my aunt to give me a process, and I had pretty good hair that wouldn't do me any good.
Right.
And so she washed my hair, and I thought I had a process. But all that being said, a lot of times when I would go to the barbershop, there'd be this older guy in the back, and it was Mr. Matthews. It was George Matthews, you know, who had the Matthews Hotel and ended up being a millionaire and gave money to the University of Akron. So, you know, he was one of the main people there on Howard Street. And, you know, and I used to see him in his office in the back and, you know, didn't remember having a lot of conversations with him, but he was always kind, always spoke. But, so I had that experience. They were trying to develop downtown and they saw this little black Mecca that, you know, they had some successful businesses there. And the city took the position that, you know, we're gonna take all those properties and we're going to move those people out. We're going to displace those people. You know, and not going to really compensate them was really what they should be getting compensated. And so a lot of those guys ended up going out of business. They just couldn't find another place. And,
right.
And you didn't have that same synergy that you had on Howard Street where African-American people were coming in there. And they had the Green Turtle restaurant there. You can get a meal. And then they had entertainment and stuff.
Right.
So, you know, they took the position, we're going to cut them out, which that's exactly what they did. They just destroyed Howard Street and tore it down. And, you know, and then it went into neighborhoods, and particularly in black neighborhoods. They decided to do public housing. What did they do? They put it all in the same neighborhood. You know, they put Safer-Steen 1 and 2.
Right.
Byers 1 and 2.
2, right.
You know, Edgewood, Channelwood, Bonsu. They put them all in the same neighborhood, which is a mistake. You don't want to put all of any kind of people, particularly people who are economically distressed, in the same neighborhood because it causes all kind of problems. But the powers that be just, you know, really didn't care.
Get pressure from somebody that says, we don't want this in our, you know, the whole not in my backyard kind
that's,
of
that's exactly
syndrome,
right.
You know?
That's right. And people were powerless and weren't politically savvy. They didn't hold elective office. Not enough of them to do anything to stop what they were trying to do. And they just did it, you know. And then you had the recycled energy plant. Where they put that? Put it in the black neighborhood. You know, just say, you know, we're just going to take it. The
right.
Interbelt. We're going to take this land. We're going to run an Interbelt. They built an Interbelt that just destroyed a black neighborhood, but it really never connected to anything else.
Is that when you come into downtown?
Right,
I've
right.
always kind of wondered what
right.
that is because it doesn't really go anywhere.
It does. They claim they ran out of money. It was supposed to, at the end of it, when you get to Main Street there, it was supposed to connect to Route 8.
Right.
They claim they never got the money for doing it, but it was a big disaster, you know.
Now, you touched on housing a little bit earlier, talking about, you know, they kept putting low-income housing, you know, all in one place. Was that an organized thing that they
Of course it was organized. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's because they figured they'd keep poor people all in one area, you know.
Right.
Other people wouldn't care, and that's exactly what they did. But, you know, but it just, so if you've been around long enough, you know, now I'm on the board of the Housing Authority.
Right.
I'm a board member for the last couple of years. So, you know, it's a new day. New fresh eyes, different way to do in business. My biggest thing was no diversity in the hiring.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest thing. You know, I mean, they're a big organization. They have a lot of money, have a lot of jobs, and not very many African-Americans. And the former director was a friend of mine, good friend. I was a deputy mayor at one time himself, and I could never really get him to even break that open, you know, but since I've been in for the last couple of years, our minority hires have went up, you know, almost 20%.
Okay.
So, you know, we're going to keep working on things like that and make sure that other people get opportunities.
Now, when you speak about all this, do you think, you know, Akron, say, coming out of World War II, I'm sure World War II was a boon for Akron, for the rubber factories and all that. Were all of these ideas in place? Was Akron a segregated city after World War II?
Sure, absolutely. It's still segregated. You look at the schools and you see, where you went to school and what your zip code is. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was very segregated, and that's the way they wanted it, and that's the way it was for a long time.
When did that start to kind of shake up a little bit?
Well, it probably started shaking up sometime in the late 60s, early 70s, probably.
Okay.
Kind of changed a little bit.
But then they start knocking down these African-American neighborhoods like Howard Street and stuff like that. Where do those people go?
Well, they end up moving to the west side of Akron on the hill, and then they took their home and then they said give them enough money to buy another house, But then we dealt with that, too, when I was in there. I didn't like the way the formula was and kind of felt that we should up it and we're able to give people a little bit more money.
Right.
One of the tools that we used was the fact that what they would do, they would come in, they would appraise your house, and they would appraise your house for peanuts.
Right.
And that's because they're going to take it.
Right.
So they determine what it's cost, but they're not compensating for the land, which is the valuable part.
Right.
And that's the part that they can take and they can use. So that was another process we had to go through with them on that. But, we end up having another through the feds, and I think the feds kind of saw this too. And so then they start paying you whatever the fair market value for your house was, which was going to be very, very low. But they gave you relocation, and the relocation many times is more than the value of your house.
House, right.
Yeah, so when you're adding them two together, you came away a little bit more money,
right?
And they'd buy a little bit better house.
So you said when you first got into politics that you wanted to help people while they were alive. What were some of the things that were on your mind that you wanted to help people out with when you first?
Well, I thought that we should, have money to go into business, housing opportunities, be able to live in certain neighborhoods, able to get a good education, all those things. But then again, like I said, my life has just been so wonderful because I've always got in touch with the right people. And there was another gentleman that I used to go to the Urban League, and the Urban League was a great organization. It used to be called the Akron Community Service Center and Urban League. And basically what it was actually started by Harvey Firestone and some people in the rubber industry who wanted to do some things to help some people in the African-American community. And they put money into the Urban League, for African-American people to get training and do a number of things. And one of the people who ended up being director over there was a guy named Vernon Odom. And so you'll see a street by named Vernon Odom in the city.
Drive by it all the time, yeah.
Yeah, it's my hero,
Really?
And I was able to name that street after him, And so whenever I'm having a bad day, I get off at Vernon Odom Boulevard and I can just look up to the sky and say, yeah.
What did he do?
Well, Vernon Odom was just so instrumental in this whole community. He just did, he just was a wonderful person. First of all, he was a graduate of Morehouse College.
Okay.
And who else graduated from Morehouse College? Dr. King, who was his classmate.
Wow.
Of course, Dr. King was only 15 years old when he graduated from Morehouse. And so, so from that experience, Mr. Odom came here and he was really involved in civil rights. And so he was really the person who was the connection between the business community and the black community and the government and the black community. And at the time, we didn't have any African-American people being policemen, just very few. And so the NAACP sued the city of Akron, took them to federal court and won, and they were forced to hire African Americans. So Mr. Odom was instrumental in recruiting African Americans to be policemen, and also he was instrumental in recruiting people to be in apprenticeship programs, particularly at Goodyear, people who were machinists and electricians,
skilled trades,
right. And so he was very instrumental in working with them to make that happen. And he was just a wonderful, wonderful person. And his wife was wonderful. And his son is I saw his son 2 weeks ago because he had to come into the funeral of Jesse Williams. Because I called him up, said Jesse died, can you come over? Because he's in Philadelphia. So he came over. And so like I said, Mr. Odom was just another person that's just really taught me so much about life and politics and dealing with the powers that be.
Now, let's talk about the future a little bit. Akron's, you know, industrial fortunes are slimmer than they were, you know, years ago. What's the bright shining light in Akron, you know, for the next, say, 20 years?
Well, I think the main thing that's shining bright for us is the fact that we got water. That's major. A lot of places don't have water.
Right.
I mean, there's even talk about taking water from us and putting it in a pipe and sending it down.
Right.
Down to the, you know, to the southern states, which I hope it never happens. But that's one of the things that we're very successful with. There was a guy by the name of Ledoon, and he came with the idea of where our water source should come from. Of course, people thought it should be Lake Erie.
Right.
But he looked up here in Geauga County, and, you know, and so it's called Lake Ledoon up there now.
That's right, yeah.
You know, and so, man, we, as far as water, we in great shape.
Yeah. Okay.
We're in great shape.
We're
in really good shape for our water, so that's a good part. I think the climate's another thing that's just going to work in our favor because it's a lot cheaper to heat than cool, you know, and so a lot of these factories, you have to do air conditioning and the cost involved in that, so that's going to work in our favor, too. So, you know, with those two things, I think you know, we're kind of trying to move forward. Now, what we had also been trying to do, too, was we had tried to attract foreign investment.
Okay.
So when I was on city council and when I was the president, we traveled the globe, you know, trying to attract different businesses to come back here.
Right.
And that was great. We went to a lot of places, China, Israel, Germany. So we've had a lot of success in Germany.
Right.
If you go out Maslin Road. There's a place called Roofsling, and it's a place that makes parts for BMW.
Okay.
And we went to Germany. We met this company. They were looking for a place in the States, and
right.
We were able to convince them to come to Akron. I think they got about 250 jobs out there,
okay.
which is great. You
right.
know? And then when you have 250 jobs, then you had to have support services.
Right.
Equipment, supplies.
Right. Maintenance
and
right.
stuff. And a lot of these places, they want the distributors. They give stuff for them to build stuff. They want them close rather than have inventory in their own place. So, you know, we've had some success with that. If you look at it's a place on Miller Road, it's called Mesnick. And, you know, you will see, what is Mesnick? But Mesnick is a pretty large Chinese company.
Okay.
So we went to China. You know, I don't know. I've been to China, I don't know, 10, 12 times. I've been a lot of times.
Right.
We spent a lot of time with them.
Is there a polymers industry in Akron now, too?
Well, yes, polymers is still pretty big. You know, University of Akron is probably one of the leading polymer places in the whole world. You know,
right.
And when you go to China, you're in Beijing or something like that, and you say University of Akron, you know, a lot of these guys,
right.
you know, they went here and they trained here and they went back to China.
My niece's husband's getting a master's degree at Akron.
That's a good thing. You know,
yeah.
Polymers are just, there's so many variations of polymers and
right.
stuff, you know.
But wow.
University of Akron is a major player.
Our musical guest, Free Black, named their last album Freedom Summer. So before their live stream from Akron Recording Company, I sat down with them and I asked them about the inspiration for that title. During that conversation, we touched on a lot of topics, including the social upheaval of the last year and how their music is inspired by that, how their music can push the conversation forward, and what that conversation needs to be to make opportunities inclusive for all people. They had a lot of great insights, and we're going to play those for you here in just a second, and we're going to tune in and listen to another of their live performances. If you weren't able to catch the performance from Akron Recording Company on our live stream, I suggest going to the Roots of American Music Facebook page, liking the page so you can be notified of future live streams, and also look at our video archive of all the other great performances we've had during the Akron Heritage Music Project. So let's talk to the guys in the band a little bit, and then listen to a duo of songs that they performed during the live stream called Free, and the other one is called Black Musicians.
Now, that was inspired, that the Freedom Summer title, was that inspired by something you read or something? I think Justin might have told me that.
So the same way we came up with a name, like we were just kind of texting or whatever, mm-hmm. and we were throwing out a couple names, and I was like, what about Free Black? Like, what if, you know, we're free to just do whatever and be whatever? I'll have concepts the same way, and Freedom Summer was that thing for me. The George Floyd murder happened. I think the Ahmaud Arbery thing happened. And I got to thinking, I was like, I hate that this just feels so familiar. And I don't know what the trigger was, but I went to look for Freedom Summer in 1964, all the stuff that was happening in Mississippi. And I just got this idea and I was like, I think I want to call the album Freedom Summer. And I texted him that, but I was like, but I have to read the book before we do this.
Because right.
our first album, we used some archive photos from the library of the Akron riots in 1968.
Okay.
And it was the same thing. It was like, I wanted to do a bunch of research. So if anybody ever came to us, they wouldn't do that. Like, oh, you guys are just using struggle stuff to whatever for profit. And
right.
I was like, no, I actually researched this.
Right.
So it was like, I read the Freedom Summer book and I was like, okay, I think I know what we're doing now. We got these songs, and then we got to work on it.
And funny thing is, if I can add to that, like the photos that Flacco chose for the album, if you really listen to the album and then you look at the photos, it's like, I told him this the other day, like, I feel like the people on the album covers are expressing what it is via him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's just like, you can say that for either our first album or Freedom Summer. It's just like, okay, that I can relate the music and the image as well. So, yeah.
Isn't that frustrating on some level, though, that it's been like, what is that, 60 years? And like, it still has that connection to those photos that you're talking about.
And
like,
that was the selling point for me. And when I was trying to sell him on it, I was like, fam, I'm sending him stuff in the book. Like, they were saying this on television.
Right.
And then this happened 2 months ago. This mayor got up here and said this. I was like, it's the same propaganda. Like, we still have this same problem. And while there's been a lot of progress, it's still, we're at the same conversation.
Right.
And that was, we had, like I said, we had been playing these songs at the shows. But then now some of those little lines was like, oh, this is really relevant right now.
Right. What needs to change, I guess, in your mind?
I think when we talk about getting people more involved, it's always about meeting people where they are. And there's a lot of instances in very small but very major things that I can always spot it. When you think about public transportation and you get on social media and there you'll see, hey, we have this new mobile app. It makes it easier to, you know, you can link it to your social media and your cards and all that stuff or whatever. But it's like you're posting it on Twitter.
Right.
And it's like how much of your ridership is actually
on Twitter.
You know
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
So it's meeting people where they are. Like it's getting out in the neighborhoods of the people that you say you're talking to and finding the community leaders that can help get that message out.
Right.
It's if you're giving out utility or rent assistance, but you're only putting it on the city's website, and the city's website should have been redesigned 20 years ago. Who's going to the city website to know that?
Right.
Flyering needs to happen. Outreach needs to happen. Mm-hmm. So I think the biggest thing is like meeting people where they are.
Yeah.
And
because not everybody has the same access as other people do, you know? So it's just like if everybody knew about it, like on a different medium, then yeah, we're here.
Right.
This is where we're at. We all have a common ground.
As far as the country, I wish I was qualified to answer that. I feel like the whole thing needs to be torn down and redone. We know that's not going to happen.
Right.
So it's just the communities being able to take the power back as best we can and getting back to looking out for each other and building Black Wall Streets and building and not just Black people, but I'm Black. So that's always what I'm thinking about.
Sure.
First.
Right.
But communities as a whole, getting ourselves off of this wheel where we're waiting for the governments to come in and save us. We're waiting for our council people. I understand these folks work for us and they should be accountable to us.
Right.
But community gardens are a thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like co-ops are a thing. These things exist because the help that said it was coming didn't come.
Right.
And the people took it in their hands to be like, okay, everybody on this block is going to have a meal. And then once everybody on this block has a meal, then we're going to go to the next
block. Right.
And we just continue to do that. So I feel like while we're waiting on the top-down politics, we just got to take the power in our hands and make sure that we're doing what we can for the person next to us and the person across the street from us. And, you know, strength in numbers.
Right.
Strength in numbers. If they keep us divided and arguing about getting on next door, arguing about who didn't pick up whose dog shit.
Right.
It's like all of that's happening, and it's just there's so many other conversations we could be having.
Right. Free as the color of my skin, it's love to all my people. Free as the feeling and ability to drop the ego. Free as the life you live when time is something less than we hold. Free as the limits and how far we can go. Hold on, I ain't a freedom fighter, I'm just seeking brighter days. Just hope you heed these bars and catch yourself a lighter case. I ain't never been side of base or easily swayed. Somewhere between sway, not having an answer for Kanye. Mixed with Benny and Conway. Quick to address your character like cosplay. Swear so many people out here searching for prime days, but won't pom-pom for their own sake. We're here to make the people feel higher than Britney Newsome on a flagpole. Expose America's contents of a bathrobe. From tadpole to adolescent, that depression rabbit holes looking for reasons to get like a droner, but my enemy's homes we get. Was never slide around my family stone. I can't lie, say hi to the neighbors. I gotta see the world. In every city, they gon' need an FT referral. Ain't y'all the pearl, so get aware. You asking if I'm free, and I said,
yeah.
Free as the color of my skin, it's love to all my people. Free as the feeling and ability to drop the ego. Free as the life you live when time is on, that's it, we are. Free as the lyrics, and I thought we could go. Is you out there? Louder! Let's go! Spirit of Eunice Wayman in Venezuela. Travel the world, inspire the kids to keep their head up. No tolerance of disrespect towards our young Corettas. Might not understand our slang, but don't you dare correct us. My culture started in the streets of the Bronx. Traveled to every radio in Motion Apart. I used to beatbox on the picnic tables out in the park. I wrote rhymes for my cousins when the battles would start. Early on, all my heroes that I had were Lex. Led me to the pad, I would write my thoughts down when the world turned. Back when Michael Jackson wrote. But it did matter, none of those parents had their kids splattered or environments that would encourage us to be combative. And what I idolized, changed with intuition. And usually the research would always lead me back to it.
You already know, in those days.
Compare me to the... My heroes are
in those days.
Compare me to the black, black, black. Here goes one, two, three. Can't believe I was afraid to be. It had to be. I ain't have a pair of Jordans, they would tell me I ain't. It never bothered me too much at the time until I uncovered the underlying facade. It's levels to the skin color of mine. If you look like me, I could never be enough to get by. But if we differ, then I'm always too much to survive. You know I care, do piercing or honey buns. My art is equal in content, never in funds. And Holbrook is Art Blakey on the drums as he watches the direction he created to become. Channel a network you can't tap into. I'm a start a religion and I'm trying to recruit. God coming back soon in a pinstripe suit. Driving a 57 Bentley coupe.
And she's only taking. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for your man. Flacco Torres is in the building!
In those days, compare me to the. Hey, it goes one, two, three. Eunice Wayman.
Miles Davis.
John Coltrane.
What needs to happen in a city like Akron to make African-American people feel like part of the process?
Well, one thing that I am going to do is, this is so, see how funny how things work out. I'm on the Board of Elections now.
Okay.
The first African-American member ever.
Wow.
And so, you know, that's my charge, to make sure that every vote is counted and everybody gets opportunity to vote.
Wow, what a great conversation. I want to thank Marco Somerville for sitting down with me and talking about his personal history, his life in politics, the politics of Akron, Ohio, and what Akron is moving towards in the future. I also want to thank Free Black for coming and performing at Akron Recording Company for our live stream. It was a great performance. Once again, go check out our Facebook page and watch that performance. You will not be disappointed. I also want to thank Mike Fanos for editing work, Dave Polster for mastering work, the whole crew at Akron Recording Company for making these recordings and live streams possible. I'd like to thank Kevin Richards, the creative director at Roots of American Music, Jason Myers, the executive director of Roots of American Music, the GAR Foundation, and the Knight Foundation for funding these podcasts. If you like the information in these podcasts, please consider donating to Roots of American Music. You can find our webpage at www.rootsofamericanmusic.org, and there's a PayPal link there. You can send us some money, and it'll ensure that our mission continues into the future. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Akron Heritage Music Project, and we'll see you next month with another great story from Akron, Ohio. Have a great day.
Hey nerds, I'm Sarah, the paper nerd, and if you've ever wondered what goes into that greeting card you just sent or received, well, quite a lot. Get your paper fix on the Paperfold, where I host an enchanting mix of personalities and players all nerding out on my favorite topic, stationery. From the designs of our snail-mail communications to the precious space created when two people correspond, there's a lot to cover. So come grab a seat in the stationery community's only five-star paper salon, the Paperfold, now part of the Evergreen Podcast Network.